program. As Doug shows, there's a lot going on in Nicaragua. I've been your host, Jim Nelson, for this evening's program, Hemispheres. Tune in next week. And now it's time for Cabaret.
Destination Freedom Black Radio Days is a copyrighted program of No Credits Production, LLC. Any unauthorized rebroadcast, recording, or any use of this program is strictly prohibited. Destination Freedom is sponsored in part by Arts and Society, Bonfils Stanford Foundation, the Ulipians Fund of the Denver Foundation, the Urban Spectrum, Karen and Johnny Klein, and No Credits Production, LLC.
Destination Freedom Black Radio Days presents James Step Back Williams, A COVID Tale. This is it! 11 seconds on the clock, Metro trails by two. On all accounts, the ball is in the right player's hands. James Step Back Williams. Williams has already scored 27 points, 11 in the fourth quarter. Richards guards him. Williams with a crossover. A second crossover. 3 seconds. A third crossover. There is the step back. He has space. He lets it fly. Nothing but net. Metro takes the conference finals and Step Back does it again. Destination Freedom.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me. And before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave. And go home to my Lord and be free.
James Step Back Williams woke up early on a cold March morning in 2020. He had a slight headache, which for him was not a common thing. Step Back, as most people knew him and called him, was in top physical condition. He was maybe 5 pounds heavier than he was in high school and college, where he was a star on and off the basketball court. In fact, that's where he got the name Step Back. He had developed this wicked move to get his shot off, first over his papa, who he loved to play with, and later, all the other hot breath and eager defenders ready to block his jump shot.
You can't block what you can't touch,
he would boast as he would get off an easy 2 or 3-pointer or fake and shoot a pinpoint pass to a teammate. Step Back was flashing back on a few games as he got in the shower to get ready for work. As he toweled off, he opened the medicine cabinet to get some aspirin. Vanessa, his wife, comes in and gives him a kiss.
What's wrong, baby?
I have a headache, and the pain's not going away. Want to go back to bed, but I have too much work to do.
Can't you just call in? I know you have enough sick time, and you never take off.
I know. Maybe next week. You know how who is, you know how she is.
Mm-hmm.
Got to be there on time when everybody else can come in anytime they want to, or call in at the smallest thing, or take off for a week every month with no blowback.
I know. However, you don't want to push yourself too hard.
I know it's just probably the beginning of a cold.
Baby, but you have not had a cold in years.
Babe, I'm good. I'll check in with you later today.
They hug and kiss. As always.
Yeah. Wish the music could make its head pound and go away. My head is pounding. Throat's a little sore. Gotta push through. Got training today. It's been nice being a trainer at the All Humans Are Important Memorial Hospital. I can't believe it's been 20 years working with actors, doctors, students from all different schools, medical, physical therapy, international students. I only wish that there were more students of color, which is a real issue, especially in the medical school. Well, gotta do my part. Better get on in here.
Yes, of course, of course.
Yes.
Of course, it must be.
You know, the studies are saying that it's...
Got to do it any time. Cannot just do it once or twice. Let's do it many times. There's lots of classes going on.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I go.
Amen.
Beautiful, beautiful. You remember.
Yes, step back. It's Kiswahili for may I have your attention. Yes, you may. Loosely translate it.
Yes. Thank you, Ellen. Okay, let's get started. Is everybody ready? Settle down. Let's start with our wellness check-in. How's everybody doing? How's your family?
We are good. We're good.
Very
thank you for
good.
Asking.
Thank you, yes.
Rocking.
How are you, step back?
Well, actually, I'm not feeling like myself today. I have a wicked headache going on.
Oh, no, no. I will give you some aspirin if you like.
I don't know if that's going to do any good, but thanks, everyone. I think I can get through this. Y'all have your cases, right?
Yes. We have done this case like 100 times. Hey, step back. When are we going to get some new cases?
I keep asking the same question for years. I just think the faculty is too lazy or, quote, busy to change. I wrote a new case about with Dee a few years back about Sangoma, a traditional healer from South Africa, and they ran with it for a while. And the next thing we know, we've been changing some person from the suburbs with gout.
We have a few of those cases already, and they are super important. However, as someone whose family comes from England and Samuel from West Africa, we need our medical stories told as well.
Well said, Ellen. You think in 2020 that the med school and the university would be doing better? Not only diversifying cases as well as the student population, staff, and the doctors, so that the community that we serve is represented. You know, you should write to our director and express that. It seems that all the talk about medical inequities is just that, talk, lip service. Oh, look, I can see the flyer or the email now. Oh, look, another noontime talk about race and medicine. They don't call them brown bag talks anymore since we have food trucks now.
Step back grabs his head and then the table as he tries to keep from falling.
Step back, are you okay? Hey, guys, give me a hand.
Sorry, I feel a little lightheaded. I just need to sit down for a moment.
You do not look right. Come on, the ER is right across the street. We are taking you there.
Wow, it's like 10 a.m. and the ER is full.
Hey, guys, why don't you head back and let everyone know that training is canceled today? And could you tell Sylvia what is happening?
Are you sure? We hate to leave you here.
Oh, I'm fine, I'm fine. I'll call Vanessa.
Okay, but will you call us as soon as you know something?
Yeah, you got it.
The ER is full of activity. There must be 10 different languages being spoken. Some people cry out in pain. Angry, impatient voices. What's going on? Why can't someone help us? Etc. 1 hour later, a doctor comes over to step back and speaks.
What seems to be the problem, sir?
Well, I got a little lightheaded at work this morning, and I have this headache.
Have you had anything like this before? Are you on any drugs?
No, and no.
He takes out his little light and looks into Stepback's eyes. Has him follow his finger.
Follow my finger.
Puts his hand on Stepback's head and shoulder and has him shrug up. Has him squeeze his fingers.
Shrug up against my hands. Turn your head against my hand. Good. Good. Now the other side. Good. Squeeze my fingers.
Okay.
Hmm. Well, I'll take your blood pressure, but everything looks fine. You should take the day off and some Tylenol and rest. You don't look sick. You look and feel strong. Probably some of the strongest.
No.
I've seen.
The symptoms. It's funny. You know your body, right? You know your own body. Well, let's just put it like this. I know my body, and I've always been in tune with my body from back in the day when I was playing basketball. So, yes, I've always been in tune with my body, but now I was going through periods of being tired and confused and even a little depressed. And I told my wife, I said, I feel something's coming on. I said, something's not right.
Step Back is back home and goes to bed and tries to get some rest. He does take a couple of Tylenol. However, all that night at home, late into the night, his heart started racing and racing and racing and did not stop.
And finally, I said, I gotta go to the hospital. Early in the morning, my wife took me to the hospital and they did a procedure. We were able to bring it down. My heart rate went down naturally without any drugs. I had my wife send a photo of me in the hospital to my supervisor. That did a lot of good. She said, make sure you bring a doctor's excuse. Damn. I'm in the ER with tubes everywhere and bring you a damn doctor's excuse? So they just thought I got out of rhythm for some reason. I made an appointment with the cardiologist and met with him and, you know, all that. And he sent me home, you know.
You look and feel strong. Everything is fine. Excuse me a moment. Hey, Simon?
Yes, doctor?
Yes. I have this 45-year-old black male who came in and complaining of a racing heart, and it looks like flu-like symptoms. We were able to bring his heart rate down, and everything else appears to be fine. Would you like to have a closer look?
No. I know you've checked on him, and as you can see, the ER is filling up again. He looks a little obese, and you know so many black males have hypertension. I would not worry about it. Don't give him any drugs. I've just sent him on his way. I've seen black males like him survive worse.
Now, in my mind, I still know that something's not right. I also know this doctor did not take my history or try to find out about me. In my mind, I'm hearing all the old stories about patients being misdiagnosed, sent home, or given a wrong or unnecessary surgery. How black, brown, indigenous, and other non-white patients would be looked at as being able to endure more pain, take more drugs. Sometimes looked at as a pathway for some doctors to try a new unproven procedure for the so-called greater good of the medical community. All these thoughts are running through my mind as I sit down to watch the news that night.
This is breaking news from Channel 7 Eyewitness News.
Several breaking developments tonight in the coronavirus outbreak.
The first, a major announcement from President Trump.
We will be suspending all travel from Europe to the United States for the next 30 days.
The restrictions include people and cargo and will be in place for at least the next 30 days. The United Kingdom, though, is not included in the new travel ban.
This is not a financial crisis. This is just a temporary moment of time that we will overcome together as a nation.
As the day's events unfolded, you got the feeling it was not a matter of if, but when a sports league was going to have to halt play altogether. The NBA announcing it will suspend play across the league at the conclusion of tonight's schedule. But before the game even began, Jazz center Rudy Gobert had been taken to an area hospital where he tested positive for the coronavirus. Once that happened, the league made the decision to call off the game and then halt play throughout the league until further notice.
The iconic St. Patrick's Day parade in Manhattan now also postponed because of the coronavirus.
259 years and never canceled, not even once. But yes, it all ends next week. Another casualty of the epidemic.
The actor Tom Hanks and his wife Rita Wilson testing positive for the virus. Hanks tweeting the news saying, recording now, "Hi folks, Rita and I are down here in Australia. We felt a bit tired, like we had some colds and some body aches. end quote. Hanks also wrote that he and Wilson will remain in isolation as long as is deemed necessary.
Coronavirus has now entered a devastating new phase.
The U.S. death toll from the virus has surpassed 100 people.
20,000.
More than 46,000.
150,000.
200,000.
400,000 people have now died from COVID-19.
500,071 dead.
Vanessa, are you seeing this? This is serious.
I know they say we should stay at home, wash our hands, and wear masks. I have never seen anything like this. Do they even know what it really is? Where it came from? Where did it start?
I wish I had the answers. You and I, from the first time we met in English class, have always thought of ourselves as being well-informed. Mm-hmm. But there's so much crap in the news and coming from politicians that it makes it hard to cut through the noise. Anyway, I bought some masks and gloves home recently to use when we paint. Where are they?
On the island in the kitchen. Smart move, baby. We will get through this together as always.
I like your confidence. Yeah, I hope that would be enough. I don't think that's what I had in mind to use them on, but you never know. Babe, I think I might turn in early tonight, right after dinner.
Are you not feeling any better after going to the hospital and seeing a doctor?
I still feel very off. Vanessa, when I was in the hospital, a doctor came in and he said, yeah, we tested you for COVID, but you don't have it. I'm sure you don't have it. It's something else. Don't worry about it.
But he didn't have any results. He was just telling you that. All of that seemed strange.
That's right. He didn't have any results. He was just going off his instincts. I think sometimes that real doctors may watch too many fake doctor shows. They're seeing visions of organs and treatments on the ceiling of the hospital instead of listening to their patients and checking all the results. They seem to be obsessed with typing into their computers.
As many as 80% of medical bills contain at least one error. A little more than 4,000 surgical errors occur each year. It's estimated that 7,000 to 9,000 patients die every year from medication errors. As you can see from our top stats, medical errors are abundant in the American healthcare system. Half of white medical trainees believe such myths as black people have thicker skin or less sensitive nerve endings than white people. An expert looks at how false notions and hidden biases fuel inadequate treatment of minorities' pain. That is from the Association of American Medical Colleges. Step Back's alarm sounds. He rises and goes to the shower to get ready for work. He feels a little lightheaded, but otherwise fine. He kisses Vanessa.
Baby, I'll check in with you later.
Okay, please just call me when you get to work. I just wish you would stay home. Yeah.
I'm fine, baby, really. Traffic's light this morning. I should be there in no time. I think I'll just sit here for a minute. I'm feeling kind of hot, dizzy. Just let me let the window down and get some fresh air. Glad I came to the ER first. Maybe they'll listen this time. That's strange. I don't smell the coffee from the coffee shop or that rubber smell from the construction site. Just gonna lay my head back, close my eyes for a minute, then I head into the hospital.
Sir, are you okay?
Hey, I know him. That's Step Back Williams. Get help here now. Step back. Jane, can you hear me?
Breaking news. Former star basketball player and activist James Stepback Williams was found dead in the parking lot of the All Human Are Important Memorial Hospital this morning, where he worked as a medical trainer. No cause of death is reported at this time. James was a pillar of the community, having founded two nonprofits that worked with youth and formerly incarcerated men and women.
James knew so many people from all walks of life. He would have been happy to know that so many turned out to honor him today.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
We love Step Back, Miss Williams.
James was amazing.
Thank you. He was an amazing man. He taught me so much. Always encouraged me and whatever new thing I wanted to try until I landed as medicine, as my love. He said, you'd be the difference maker. Don't think you know it at all. Listen to your patients. Heal their bodies and their spirits. I promise you, Pops, that will be my mission. I would know he would not like this somber music. Can we change it up, Mom?
You are so right. He would want something that you could move to a bit.
3 weeks have passed since James Step Back Williams was found dead in a hospital parking lot. The autopsy report shows that he died of COVID-19, the virus that has become a global pandemic.
Mr. Williams, we tested you for the virus COVID-19, and your results are negative. It looks like it's the start of the flu. Why don't you head home? Take some time off work if you can. Make sure you drink plenty of fluids. You should be better in a few days. Good luck. Hey, Mom. Where are you? I'm home. I know I'm a little early, but I just can't focus on anything but Dad dying and dying the way he did and where he was.
Son, I know it's hard. I'm up a few hours, then down the next few hours. Can I make you something to eat? Are you hungry?
No. I'm good. Thanks. Mom, you have so much mail that has piled up. I know you might not want to go through it, however, you should go through some of it. There might be something important in this pile.
I know you're right, son. Let's see. These look like cards from the hospital. Interesting. What the hell? I can't believe this. These are not cards. They are bills. After all the charity work he has done for these hospitals, sending bills for not only the ER, but dying in their stupid parking lot from an ER service or ambulance or something. Plus two trips that he made to the ER saying that one of the doctors was out of network and a facility fee. This one says cause of death, COVID-19. But I say for lack of understanding that something was wrong. James would always come back from the doctor's appointments and tell me that he had to tell his doctor, which a lot of times would be a different doctor because it would be a resident assigned to the clinic. He would have to tell them, give a full exam, not just take his vitals, do blood work, do a cancer screening, and so forth. He would have to tell them, no, you didn't check me completely. I don't know how many times he heard them say, wow, you look healthy and in great shape. Oh, that pain is bone on bone, and we can't help you with that. Take some ibuprofen like that was a cure-all. That's okay. Once we tell his story, his death will not be in vain. I hope that others will take this disease seriously and stop blowing it off as a hoax if stupid-ass politicians would do real research and realize people are dying. Dying! They don't take it serious until their loved one dies. And then they're mourning. Oh, I should have taken this COVID-19 serious. Son, you keep your promise and be a healer and be a difference maker in the medical community, okay?
I will, Mom. That's my promise to Pops. To you and all who need me.
1 year later, James' son, James Jr., arrives home from college from his first in-person classes.
Mom, where are you? I'm home. The drive wasn't too bad this time. I didn't want the risk flying with all the craziness at the airport, airlines. Wow. The lines that I see on the news and my friends tell me about and those who have flown recently. Mom? You upstairs? She's probably in the laundry room. Mom, I texted you over an hour ago. Then I called when I was getting off the highway. Mom, are you home? Maybe she is asleep. She did say that she was feeling tired the last time I spoke with her. And that was a couple days ago. I'll try her bedroom. Great. She left a note.
James Jr., Gwen took me to the ER. I did a rapid test this morning, and I tested positive for COVID. Don't worry, I'll be fine. I'm at Mercy.
This can't be happening. Not to my mom. Not to us again.
The latest numbers as of November 2021. Confirmed cases, 46,822,434. Plus 64,601. Deaths, 759,310, plus 722, and counting. According to KMOV, David Alexander Bell, 39, died in the hospital parking lot of the Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Peter's, Missouri on January 12th after experiencing extreme chest pain during the first week of the month. His wife, Sadie Bell, says she took him to the emergency room twice that week, but says that the medical staff didn't want to admit him to the hospital. Instead, he was prescribed ibuprofen, and they were sent home. KMOV 4 reports that Bell, a board director at Central County Fire and Rescue, returned to work, but was rushed a third time to the hospital by his colleagues. After learning that her husband had been taken back to Barnes Jewish by his co-workers, she told the news station that she wishes he wouldn't have been rushed to that particular hospital, saying he said, why not? And she replied, every time that they'd taken him there, all they did was give him ibuprofen and send him home. And saying she's also really, really, they are really missing something. Mrs. Bell tells KMOV4. Sadie then claims she arrived at the hospital and found David sitting in a wheelchair outside the facility. She says she asked him once again for doctors to run tests and was told by doctors he's already been here twice for the same thing and that they already diagnosed him. You have just heard Destination Freedom Black Radio Day's production of James Step Back Williams, A COVID Tale by Donnie L. Betts. The cast included Gandia Johnson as Vanessa and Ellen, Tiege Morgan Arsola as Doctor, James Jr. and others, and Donnell Betts as James Stepback Williams. Don Randall was the narrator and others. This series is based on Richard Durham's Destination Freedom. No Credit Productions LLC and Donnell Betts produces the series in the spirit of the original, sharing the stories of Black, BIPOC, and Indigenous people who are seeking their own Destination Freedom. Subscribe to our podcast at Broadway Podcast Network, Spotify, iTunes, Apple, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast. Be sure to leave a comment. I'm Don Randall for No Credits Productions.
And I'm Donnell Betts, producer-director of Destination Freedom. You're listening to Destination Freedom on KGNU, Denver and Boulder. Stay tuned for a rebroadcast of an interview with Reverend Terrence Hughes, activist, as he shares his own COVID tale. Thank you so much for listening. Next up on Destination Freedom.
When I was in the hospital that I never came out of for two and a half months.
Yes.
A doctor came in. He said, yeah, we tested you for COVID, but you don't have it. I'm sure you don't have it. It's something else. Don't worry about it.
But he didn't have any results. He was just telling you that.
That's right. He didn't have any results. He was just going off his instincts. And it wasn't maybe an hour or two later. This was well into the night. My wife had been in the room with me the whole time. And they come back and says, oh, another doctor comes in and says, you're positive. I'm like, wait a minute. The other guy just said he was pretty sure I wasn't positive. And they said, no, I don't know what he was talking about, but these results, you're positive.
You know,
that started down the rabbit hole.
Oh, my God. Yeah, down the rabbit hole is right down there. Welcome to episode 11 of Destination Freedom Black Radio Days podcast. I'm producer-director Donnell Betts. Black Radio Days bring you a special podcast. I'm proud to share with you a series of interviews with healthcare providers, COVID-19 survivors, and social justice warriors. We will continue on our road to Destination Freedom Black Radio Days. Now up, we speak with Reverend Terrence Hughes, better known as Big T, a pastor who's been a force in his community for years. He's finally home after a long battle with COVID-19. Reverend Hughes was released from the Rocky Mountain Region VA Medical Center after spending nearly 7 weeks on a ventilator. He then spent 2 weeks continuing his recovery in rehab. Join me for my conversation with this longtime activist. This is your host, Donnie Betts, and I am honored to be part of a conversation that I'm going to have with someone that I've admired for many years in the Denver community, especially in the social justice arena. He's been a fighter for many, many years, especially around AIDS, racial discrimination, and police shootings, faith, you name it. Pastor Reverend Terrence Hughes, better known as Pastor Reverend Big T, has been part of it. But this past March, he was in a fight for his life. He came down with COVID-19, and he fought that for 2 months in the VA hospital here in Aurora. And for the last 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks, he's been recovering first in rehab, and then the last week or so at his home in Montbello. So we're honored that he can join us today for a few minutes to talk about his battle with that disease and also what are his plans for the future. Because before he was stricken, he was a candidate, political candidate, for state office. So we want to see if his plans are has changed, of course, but maybe in the near future he will resume his campaign for office in a later date. Pastor Hughes, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you, Brother Donnie.
How are you feeling? First question.
You know, I'm coming along, man. I'm doing much better than what the doctors had anticipated. It's really been, people have used the term miracle with me a lot. And the journey has not ceased to be miraculous. For someone who was on a ventilator twice and trached up in the last 2 months, to be where I'm at and be at home right now, no one expected that to happen.
Oh, my goodness.
No one expected that to happen. I was actually scheduled to be in rehab for much, much longer than this, because when I first got there, I could not walk and I could not wipe. If I could walk, I could wipe.
The two W's, right?
That's right, the two W's.
Well, I am so glad that you can do both.
Yes.
That's good. I got to remember that. Well, Big T, you know, like I said, I've known you for many years, and when I read it, I read it on Facebook that you were hospitalized, and it just broke my heart. And then I would keep up with, of course, with your great friend, Brother Jeff, who you worked with for many years. And also, I know you did a wonderful, wonderful interview with his Facebook Live program as soon as you got out. So I'm so glad you were able to do that as well, to let the community know that you are here and back and ready to take action once you recover. Tell me, how did you first find out? I mean, what symptoms were you showing? Did you ever get tested? Those couple questions I had.
No, the symptoms, it's funny, you know your body, right? You know your own body. Let's put it like this. I know my body, and I've always been in tune with it from back when I was bodybuilding back in the day. So I've always been in tune with my body. And I was going through, just periods of being tired. And I told my wife, I said, I feel something coming on. And I said, something's not right. I'm feeling something coming on. But then what happened was my heart started acting erratically. Now, that's something I've never had.
Wow.
And so one night at home, in the late night, my heart started racing and racing and racing and did not stop. And finally, I said, I gotta go to the hospital. Early in the morning, my wife took me to the hospital, and we did a procedure, and we were able to bring it down naturally without any drugs. So they just thought I just got out of rhythm for some reason. Made an appointment with the cardiologist, and met with him and all that, and sent me home. And so basically, it wasn't until I had to go back in. And so part of the story for me right now, and one of the lasting effects, my memory was affected during this ordeal. So there's some pockets of time. There are some pockets that I just flat out don't remember yet. And some things just come back. All of a sudden, it'll come back to me where I didn't remember it before. So even in my journey, there's some things that I don't remember time-wise all the way.
Wow.
But it was my heart really that triggered being tested and stuff like that. And they originally thought I didn't have it.
Huh.
Originally they said, you don't have it. Matter of fact, when I was in the hospital that I never came out of for two and a half months.
Yes.
A doctor came in. He said, yeah, we tested you for COVID, but you don't have it. I'm sure you don't have it. It's something else. Don't worry about it.
But he didn't have any results. He was just telling you that.
That's right. He didn't have any results. He was just going off his instincts. And it wasn't maybe an hour or two later, and this was well into the night. My wife had been in the room with me the whole time. And they come back and says, oh, another doctor comes in and says, you're positive. I'm like, wait a minute. The other guy just said he was pretty sure I wasn't positive. And they said, no, I don't know what he was talking about, but these results, you're positive.
You know,
that started down the rabbit hole.
Oh my God. Yeah. Down the rabbit hole is right. With your health and your life at stake by someone giving you kind of like, it sounds like even like a flippant kind of diagnosis. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you, someone who dealt with these kind of issues, your whole career, and that's especially mm-hmm. health inequities, So I don't know if that was it, was rearing his ugly head at the moment. I mean, what did you feel once you really found out, that you was positive, and now you're going to have this, like you said, down the rabbit hole, this journey and struggle that's going to be ahead of you.
Well, one of the main things that I remember was because I was in the campaign season, I knew I had a duty to let the community know. I had a duty to let my friends and family know, because I had been reading up on COVID when it first came out. And, there wasn't very many people dying at that time of it, but they were talking about how devastating it was in China. And I'm a news buff.
Yes.
I'm a news buff. And so I had been reading up on it, and I just saw it, call it prophetic, call it instinct, whatever you want to call it. But that was also part of my campaign. And I was saying at the time when on the trail, I was saying that, a lot of our citizens are living a middle-class life that's not really accurate. And one catastrophe, and you're going to find out that you're not middle-class, and you're going to be struggling just like all the people we have out on the street right now. Mm-hmm. And lo and behold, that became true. And so that was kind of the foray for me to write. I penned a letter before I went under, and to the community, to let them know, number one, because, you know, I've dealt with stigma all throughout the HIV/AIDS epidemic.
Yes.
And so I wanted to dispel the stigma so people could go and get tested, you know, and that was part of the reason I'm doing that. You know, I got it. That means you can get it, you know.
That's right.
And so I wanted to dispel the stigma and encourage folks to go get tested. I want to make sure anybody who thought they was maybe had extra contact with me or whatever went and got tested, you know. I just thought that was my responsibility to alert the community to start taking care of themselves. I had no idea the wave was going to hit the way it did.
Oh my God.
But I just felt that in my spirit to sound that alarm.
Well, I appreciate you being a responsible citizen. Like I know you are, because you're right. So many people have not been responsible in doing that, alarming other people and going by the myth that I can't get it. You know,
right.
I'm okay. I'm immune. You know, mm-hmm. Because of my age or my current health status or whatever the case may be, you know, and like you said, you're someone who, yes, is in the public eye, but also, you know, you're a figure who's well-read, also have dealt with infectious diseases for a long time too, you know. So when something comes from you, that has a lot of power to it. That's truth to power. So we appreciate mm-hmm. you doing that.
Yes.
What do you think the future is going to hold for you now? How much time are they saying that it's going to really, of course, they probably don't know, really recovery wise, but what do you feel in your heart?
Well, you know, sometimes I really think I should be out there right now.
Yeah, of course you do.
But my wife, who has the cooler, more intelligent head.
Your wife, Rachel.
That's right. That's right. That's my angel. And she regulates me to make sure that I'm, you know, don't get my blood pressure too high, you know, and try to, you know, now you get healing has got to be your first priority. So I really haven't allowed myself to venture down that road of what's next as far as political wise yet, you know, or anything else. You know, Donnie, I try to do everything through prayer. You know, there was a reason why I ran. And I believe I had the go ahead from God to run, to make a difference. There was some things I saw on the horizon that bothered me. They still bother me. And I know that we have to have bold political leaders to help make some real changes. Not someone who just wants a career in politics. You know, I don't want to be beholden as a political operative, and all I'm doing is lining my pocket or preparing for the next seat I'm going to get. Mm-hmm. No, we're supposed to be taking care of the people. Your political leaders are supposed to be taking care of the public more so than themselves. And we failed that miserably with that, in my opinion, which is why we're right now during the pandemic and now also with the racial uprisings that we've had throughout these last 2 weeks.
I think people forget that it says public servant. They forget that part, public servant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Truly forget. That's truly a forgotten art. Hmm.
What would you say to, and I'm glad, like you said, you're being safe and not going out into the crowd, because I'm glad that testing is being offered to everybody who's protesting now if they seek it out. Free testing for everyone at the Pepsi Center and so on and so forth. So I hope that people take advantage of that. What would you say, because you've been out there with Michael Marshall, you've been there for the different people who've been brutalized and killed at the hands of police and or their rights have been taken because of who they are, the economic status of the color of their skin. What would you say to those people who are now protesting, and what should be their next steps? I know the protest is one means, but that's not the end all, the be all.
No, and I think you have to be one step ahead. So even amidst your protest, you really need to be planning the direction of the change.
Yes.
And not allowing them just to, okay, we're going to do it. Okay, we're going to come up with the solutions, and we're going to change. We're going to let you know, yeah, we're going to commit to this. The system protects the system, and it does not change without outsiders coming in and bringing fresh ideas and challenging it. And so, you have to be prepared.
Reverend T, please say that again. The system protects the system. Please say that again.
The system protects the system. And so when you allow the system to come up with the solutions, they're cursory solutions. They're nothing that's really going to shape or change the systemic issues that you have. And you need to have people who come from outside of that system to with fresh ideas, and that will challenge the system and where it's at and its inequities. And so oftentimes when they go to community, they have a good habit of going to find people who they know will not really challenge them, but they can say, oh, but we had citizens with us.
Yes.
The community said, one of the first things they say, oh, we had full participation with the community.
Yes.
And you be like, I don't know them people.
Right.
I don't know people. And why'd they agree to that? You know, the last task force I was on, I walked out of. And I walked out of at the end, because painfully at the end, it was clear that they weren't serious about systemic change. And I refused to be used as a tool for the system. And that had to do with, oddly enough, had to do with excessive force. And they refused to put in language of zero tolerance.
Yes.
And I said, zero tolerance of death. I don't understand why you can't have zero tolerance. I'm amazed that someone dying is not zero. you're afraid to put that language in. Well, right, that's because the Police Protection Association runs these places.
That's right.
Every city across this country has a strong PPA, and most mayors do not like challenging them.
They're afraid. Most mayors are afraid. That's what is really, really become very apparent during this particular time when we see all the protests, how the mayors are afraid to really control their own police departments. They work for them.
Yeah.
But they are unwilling or unable to do it.
Yep.
So we talked about your and so you are feeling fine now.
Well, I'm not feeling fine. That's
okay.
I sound really good.
You do. It's because you have a beautiful voice.
You're too kind. My wife says that when people hear me, and sometimes even when they see me, they think, oh, he's great again. Because I've had requests to come to speak. I've had requests to come out and participate in different things. But
yes,
I just can't do that yet, you know. And so it's deceiving, you know.
Yes.
I got a little ways to go yet, you know. Let me say this
take
real
your time.
Quick. What people don't understand about this particular, I've heard people interviewed on TV and say, you got to die from something. And if I get it, you know, and I die from it, well, I was just going to die. What people don't understand is this is one that you don't want to die from. This is one of the most wicked things I've ever encountered in my life. It separates you from everything that you love. So I've had numerous surgeries over the course of my life, and my wife has always been by my side. She's always been, when I come out of the recovery room, she's always been right there. Well, I was laid up and couldn't have contact with her for 2 months, 3 months actually. Couldn't have any contact with her. People are dying alone. When they have their funeral services, you can't really hug and comfort the family like you normally do. You know, as a pastor, you know, speaking healing and restoration to a family who lost a loved one is both through our word and through our touch in the African American community. You know, and to not be able to do that, you have people dying alone, oh my gosh. And then not to mention what it actually does to your body. It attacks every organ in your body. And as my wife says, she was told, it has a tendency to turn your immune system against itself. Mm. And so some of my lasting, when we're praying that they're temporary, but we don't know yet because this is such a foreign thing.
Right.
You know, there's just things that they don't know yet. You know, I'm losing, I'm at a loss of words for some of this, but it's a wicked disease, man. My wife, who didn't have it as bad as I had it, was home struggling by herself. Quarantine, we don't have any children at home. So she's struggling with breathing and all that stuff, all while worrying about me, all while trying to help the doctors understand certain things about me through over the phone. And in her own life, she's scared that she might die at home by herself.
Right.
This is a wicked, wicked disease. It's a wicked plague, as I like to refer to it as. And so, no, you don't want this, and you don't want to spread it to no one. You know, you may be asymptomatic and you don't show nothing, but you're still carrying it, and then you give it to somebody. You don't want to do that. This ain't nothing to play with.
I'm looking at online of this beautiful photograph of you and your wife embracing and kissing for the first time after 3 months. It's just incredible. Can you talk about that feeling when you guys first saw each other again and had a chance to embrace and touch?
Is that the one coming out of the hospital?
Yes. There's one coming out of the hospital and one when you're in your car.
Okay. Well, the one coming out of the hospital was surreal because, you know, when I woke up out of my coma, out of being on all the machines and everything, one of the first things I saw on the TV that I remember was the lines of people lining up for food.
Mm.
And that blew me away because you remember just 2 months earlier, that wasn't going on.
Right.
You know, we weren't in a crisis, in a crash like that. And so as I'm coming through, I'm hearing new words that I'd never heard. Social distancing. I'm finding out why my wife wasn't by me, you know, that she's not allowed to come in there, and so on and so forth. And even when she was better, she wasn't allowed to come. It was quite the shock. And so leaving, the mask requirement, I really wasn't up on the mask requirement. So I had my mask on. And I just thought that was just, you know, regular procedure.
Right.
But as we get to the door, as we get to the door and going outside, first I was shocked at the people that were out there. But when my wife came up on me, she has her mask on, she gives me the most powerful hug. Oh, it was what I needed. You know, that was what I needed, you know. And but there was one thing that struck with me, and that was she didn't kiss me. My wife always kisses me.
Yes.
And you know, I'm thinking about this all while I'm in that ride going from the ambulance, I'm riding to the rehab facility. And the only thing that stuck in my mind was, how come she didn't kiss me?
Mm.
How come she didn't take off her mask and kiss me? And it wasn't until I really started to get a clear head, because I was suffering from delirium also still.
Okay.
It would come in bouts. So I'd be very lucid at one point and then out the next, you know, in another land the next, you know.
Yes.
So, but then as I started getting real clear and finding out this is what this virus is doing, and this is what has changed the landscape of how we're living right now. No, you can't be kissing on folk. No, right. you need to keep space, and it's not just you because you had it. It's everyone.
Yeah.
So
everyone
it was quite the shock.
Everyone but you think was, about in love. Yes.
Yes, but my wife hugging me for the first time is indescribable, and it made me miss her so much more. You know, so much more. So while I'm in rehab, only thing I think about was getting back to my wife. You know, I want to get better. Why do you want to get better? To get home, to be with my wife.
Yes, absolutely.
To be with my wife. That's what they would ask. And that was always my answer. Never changed, Daddy.
Yeah.
To be with my wife. The reason why I'm alive today is because of my wife.
Your driving force, your savior.
Oh, that's right. She made decisions that some people may not have made, you know, concerning my life and concerning how to treat me. You know, there was a couple of times where I was on the ropes, man. And the decision to let me go was there. Wow. And she chose to fight. She knew I wanted to fight.
Yes.
And she knew I was fighting. I always had this thing where I said, well, I'll fight on one side, you fight on the other. And that's what happened. You know, and that's what happened.
We're speaking with the Reverend Terrence Hughes, who describing his battle with COVID-19 as he recovers right now at home, and how the relationship that he has with his wife helped save him, you know, and you need someone to battle for. You brought up the fact that so many people are dying alone and fighting this fight by themselves, either at home or in a hospital. So importance of family, importance of friends, importance of loved one is even more prevalent today than it ever has been. And as you said, this disease is something that separates you from all that. So thank you so much for describing that. Now that you are back together, what has it been like for you both? Because she was quarantined, as you said, herself. Now you're back together. Describe that reunion. We talked about the gigantic, beautiful hug that she gave you. Now you're home. Let's talk about now.
Well, you know, she organized that parade of cars. She said it. I'm like, a parade? What in the world? I don't need no parade, no fanfare. I just want to get them home.
Right.
But she was like, no, you know, this is what I want to do. And just a beautiful parade. And I was able to come, and my friends and family, church members and community came out and welcomed me at home. And then but when the doors closed and it was just her and I, it just felt so good. Mm. It felt good to be at home. I was having problems sleeping at the rehab facility.
Okay.
I don't have that problem like that anymore. I wake up early, but there were some nights where I absolutely did not sleep at all. And first it was partly because of the treatment, you know,
right.
Come in every so many hours to give you medications or checking your heart rate. Cause you know, one thing that they were always very cautious of was my heart rate
and my
oxygen level. Cause my lungs, Brother Donnie, my lungs at one point when I was in the hospital were totally white.
Wow.
from fluid, which is one reason why I was on the ventilator. They weren't working, you know. And so when I was in rehab, that was one thing they always kept an eye on. They were like, you know, make sure the first, you know, week or so, I was on oxygen 24 hours a day. And then when my system really started getting better, man, it just cleared up. And like I said, when I say miraculous, one day I just took the hose off. And you know, they always monitored it, and it was always perfect. You know, if it dropped down some, it come right back up. You know,
right.
And so that was kind of miraculous, because it wasn't like they did something to change that.
Right.
You know.
So it was you.
But being God
home, and Rachel.
That's it. But being home, really, man, was just. It's an indescribable feeling because it's a peace.
Okay.
And you know, she always has been a balancing force for me. Always has been a balancing force for me. So, you know, to have that balance back and to have that constant love, you know, when we're able to love on each other, because she had been through a lot.
Yes.
You know, and she needed something, you know.
Yeah.
She needed something that only I could give her, you know, just like I needed something only she could give me, you know. And by God's grace, we are able to come back together to do that, you know. And so, yeah, so now we're looking at future things. And what do we want to do, you know? We're just going to relax right now. We're just going to take it one day at a time and just enjoy it, you know.
Yeah.
And it's tough when I'm going through a physical piece and I'm going through a little challenge. It can be a little scary at times.
Yeah.
But the fact that we have each other to help walk through it, you know, to reassure each other through it, man, it just means everything.
Now, are you still on medication? I know you're doing some physical therapy, but are you still on some type of medication as well?
I am. I am still on medication. Some medication will be removed once my primary care physician, we meet and they keep evaluating where I'm at. And like I said, I now have a cardiologist that I deal with. I have to every organ I have, yes, I have to see a specialist for.
Wow.
Let's just put it like this. Every organ except for my liver, I'm meeting with a specialist about, because all of them were affected from COVID.
Wow. Wow, that's incredible. That's what people need to hear too, as you said, when somebody says, "What if I get it? I get it." I don't think they, like you said, they don't know.
And if you have a pre-existing condition, it's just a gateway. I explained it as a gateway. So someone said, "Well, how did you get it? Did you get it from when you went to New York and traveled there and this and that?" And I said, "I don't know where I got it from. I'm not going to blame it on New York."
Right.
I do remember a guy on the plane coughing incessantly. Mm. And I remember saying to myself then, "Man, I pray that guy don't have nothing." I remember saying that, you know.
Right.
You know, air just circulates in the plane around.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I don't know if that was what it was or not. I just know I was running for an office, and I had met thousands of people within a 2-week time period of shaking hands and hugging folk. And
right.
It could have been from anybody.
Exactly.
But I was also run down. My immune system was run down from all of that. And there was just a door, in my opinion, that allowed that gateway to open for the virus to enter in.
Right, right.
So my big get out of this is to rest, take care of myself, and you know, not ignore things, you know.
Yes.
That's my big get.
Take care of you. Take care of you. That way you can take
get
care
some rest.
Yeah. That way you can take care of the community when you're ready, you know?
Yes, sir.
So, and we in the community appreciate your work, and we really, really are so thankful that you're back and recovering from COVID-19. We had the honor of speaking with Reverend Terrence Hughes today, activist in our community, and just an amazing, amazing gentleman, father, grandfather, and, of course, a loving husband. Thank you again for being with us.
Yeah. Thank you, Brother Donnie. And just as I close out, thank you for all that you do for our community. You are an institution, and I am so proud to call you a friend, and I admire all that you do. Always have, always will. Anytime you need me, you just call me.
Well, I appreciate
that, brother.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Take care.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That concludes this episode of Destination Freedom Black Radio Days. Thank you for listening. Make sure you check us out at nocredits.com and pick up our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. iTunes, Radio Public, Spotify, etc. Follow us at Twitter at Donnie Betts, hashtag No Credits Production LLC, hashtag Black Radio Days, hashtag Destination Freedom Black Radio Days.
Support comes from Frequent Flyers Aerial Dance, which presents Gravity and Relativity on December 3rd, 4th, and 5th at the Dairy Arts Center in Boulder. Gravity and Relativity features beauty and agility of 7 aerial dancers who traverse a landscape of aerial silks. Tickets and more information are available at frequentflyers.org/events.
KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Stay tuned for Corriente with the Phantom Power Collective.
En cualquier estado que usted se encuentre, buenas noches, buenas tardes, buenas mañanas o buenas afternoones. Ahora le presentamos este producto que viene desde lo más profundo de nuestros corazones. Es un proyecto que ha tomado dedicación, pero viene de lo más profundo de cada uno de nosotros. Experimentando con ritmo y sentimientos, sentimientos que se han podido transmitir a la música, por esta música con cultura, música con dedicación. Por favor, continuemos con la música.
Señoras y señores, este servidor se complace en presentarles a Los Ángeles Azules.